This is an ad by BetterHelp. BetterHelp recently surveyed over 16,000 people and found that while 75% of people believe it's wise to seek support, only 27% of Americans are in therapy, and people stay silent to avoid being judged. BetterHelp has over 10 years of experience matching you with the right therapist, because we're all better with help. Visit BetterHelp.com/stopthestigma for their first ever State of Stigma report, the latest in mental health research.
Lowe's knows you want the best for dad. This Father's Day, help him take on any project with big deals on DeWalt. Right now, get a free XR 8 amp hour battery when you buy select DeWalt tools. That's not all. Get up to two free select tools when you buy a select DeWalt 20 volt max battery kit. Maximum initial battery voltage measured without a work load is 20 volts. Nominal voltage is 18.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
I'm the kind of guy who likes to keep things straightforward. Work hard, hang out with good people, and keep life as drama-free as possible. Friendship always came easy to me. That's why when Nicholas joined the auto shop a couple of years ago, we hit it off almost immediately. He wasn't just a coworker, he became like a brother to me. We'd spend our lunch breaks talking about cars, sports, and whatever dumb thing happened on TV the night before. We even started hanging out after work, grabbing beers, playing video games, or working on side projects. Nicholas was the kind of guy who always had a joke up his sleeve, and he had my back when work got stressful. I never thought twice about trusting him. Things started to change when I met Selena. I met Selena at a friend's barbecue. She was funny, down to earth, and smart, everything I could ever want. We hit it off right away, and after a few weeks of texting and casual dates, we decided to make it official. Naturally, I told Nicholas about her. I thought he'd be happy for me, but his reaction was off. "Be careful, man," he said, his tone unusually serious. "Girls like that always have an angle." I laughed it off. "What does that even mean?" "Just saying, you've got to watch your back. Not everyone's as genuine as they seem." At the time, I thought he was being overprotective. Maybe even jealous, but I didn't let it bother me. Everyone had their opinions, right? Things escalated quickly. Nicholas started making subtle comments about Selena whenever her name came up. "You sure about her, dude? I heard she's still talking to her ex." "Who told you that? What are you talking about?" "I just have sources." The weird comments didn't stop there. A few coworkers told me Nicholas had been bringing her up during breaks, saying she seemed shady, and that I'd better wake up before it's too late. It was embarrassing. Selena had barely even met these people. I tried to talk to Nicholas about it, but he acted like it was no big deal. "I'm just looking out for you," he said. "You're like family to me, man." It was hard to argue with that. Nicholas had been such a good friend for so long, and I didn't want to believe he'd deliberately try to sabotage something that made me happy. One Friday, Selena stopped by the shop to drop off lunch. It was a sweet gesture, and I was looking forward to seeing her, even if it was just for a few minutes. When she walked in, Nicholas's face grew visibly tense. "Oh, hey," he said flatly. Selena, as polite as ever, smiled and said hello, but Nicholas just muttered something and walked off. Later, one of the other guys pulled me aside. "What's up with Nicholas? He's been bad-mouthing your girlfriend nonstop since she showed up." I was furious. That night, I texted Nicholas and told him we needed to talk. He acted like I was blowing things out of proportion. "Relax, man," he replied. "I'm just trying to protect you. Can't you see she's not good for you?" About a week later, Selena and I were supposed to meet for dinner, but when she got to her car after work, her tires were flat. She called me, upset and confused. I don't know what happened. I didn't drive over anything, and all four tires are flat. It doesn't make sense. There was something off about the whole situation. I drove to her office to help, and as I was inspecting the tires, I noticed the air valves were loose. Someone had deliberately let the air out. It didn't take long to figure out who. That night, after dropping Selena off, I swung by the shop. Nicholas was working late on a project, and I decided to confront him face to face. "Did you mess with Selena's car?" I asked firmly. Nicholas's face hardened. "I don't know what you're talking about." "Cut the crap, Nicholas. You've been trying to sabotage my relationship since day one. Why can't you just let it go?" His calm facade cracked. "Because she's not right for you," he shouted. "You don't see it, but I do. She's going to ruin your life, and I'm not going to stand by and let it happen." "You don't get to decide that," I yelled back. "You'll thank me one day," he said quietly. The tension boiled over when I turned to leave. Nicholas grabbed my arm, yanking me back. "You're not walking away from this," he said. "Let go of me, Nicholas," I warned. When he didn't, I shoved him off. Things escalated quickly, and before I knew it, we were in a full-blown fight. Punches were thrown, tools clattered to the ground, and it took everything in me to keep him from pinning me down. Eventually, I managed to push him away and ran out of the shop. I drove straight to Selena's place, my hands still shaking. The next day, I talked to our boss about what happened. I didn't go into detail about the personal drama, but I made it clear that Nicholas's behavior was a liability. My boss assured me he'd handle it, but I knew I couldn't keep working there. I found a new job at another shop a few towns over, and Selena and I decided to move in together. For a while, I was constantly looking over my shoulder, like expecting Nicholas to show up out of nowhere. As I think about it, the whole situation still feels surreal. Nicholas had been my closest friend for years, someone I thought I could trust with anything. But jealousy has a way of twisting even the strongest bonds. If someone starts showing red flags, it's better to address them early, before things spiral out of control. Selena and I are still together, and I've made new friends at my new job. But every now and then, I catch myself looking at the cars around me, wondering if Nicholas is still out there, waiting for another chance to protect me. Friendship is like a workout. It takes effort, trust, and consistency to see real results. That's what I thought I had with Chris. We'd been friends for years, and I always felt like I could count on him. We met at the gym where I worked.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. BetterHelp recently surveyed over 16,000 people and found that while 75% of people believe it's wise to seek support, only 27% of Americans are in therapy, and people stay silent to avoid being judged. BetterHelp has over 10 years of experience matching you with the right therapist. Because we're all better with help. Visit BetterHelp.com/stopthestigma for their first ever State of Stigma report, the latest in mental health research.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Getting over our shared love of fitness and bantering about everything from diet plans to sports. And I thought we had the kind of solid friendship you could rely on for life. But looking back, I should have seen the red flags. It all began following a late workout one night. We were sitting in the parking lot, drinking our protein shakes and talking about life. Chris had been going on about his problems with his family, money issues, drama with his brother, and I felt for him. "Man, sometimes I feel like I can't tell anyone anything," he said, leaning back in his car seat. I agreed. "Yeah, I get that. It's hard to trust people with the big stuff." There was a long pause before he looked over at me. "You ever feel like you're carrying something you just want to get off your chest?" Maybe it was the late hour, or maybe it was just the mood of the conversation, but I decided to tell him something I'd never told anyone. It wasn't a huge deal, at least not anymore, but it was personal, something I'd kept private for years. I won't go into details here, but let's just say it was a decision I made in my early 20s that I regretted deeply. It wasn't illegal or anything, just embarrassing, something I didn't want out in the open. Chris listened intently, nodding in all the right places. When I finished, he clapped me on the shoulder and said, "Man, that's nothing. Everyone has stuff like that. You can trust me. I'd never tell a soul." I believed him. For a while, everything seemed normal. We kept working out together, hanging out on weekends, and trading playlists for gym sessions. But then, little comments started creeping into our conversations. "Hey, you remember what we talked about that night?" he said, with a smirk. "Yeah?" I replied, unsure where he was going with it. "Just saying, it's a good thing you've got me to keep that under wraps. Not everyone would be so understanding." I laughed it off the first few times, thinking he was just joking, but the comments didn't stop. Whenever I hung out with other friends or had to cancel plans with Chris, he'd make similar remarks. "Don't forget who's got your back," he'd say. I let it slide at first, thinking it was just him being weird, but the more it happened, the more it started to gnaw at me. One night, I was out with some friends from the gym and posted it on my Instagram. A few minutes later, I got a text from Chris. "Having fun without me?" I rolled my eyes and replied, "Yeah, just grabbing a drink with the guys. You good?" His response came almost immediately. "I guess. Just remember who your real friends are." It was a weird thing to say, but I didn't give it much thought back then. Then, a few days later, he casually dropped a comment while we were working out. "You know, it'd be a shame if people found out about that thing you told me. Not that I'd ever tell, of course. Just saying." I froze, mid-rep. "What's that supposed to mean?" Chris shrugged, his face the picture of innocence. "Nothing, man. Relax. You know me. I'm just messing with you." I tried to laugh it off, but my stomach was in knots for the rest of the workout. My patience reached the limit at a mutual friend's party. Chris and I were chatting with a small group of people, and the conversation turned to regrets and embarrassing stories. "Oh, I bet Alex has a good one," Chris said, nudging me with his elbow. I gave him a warning look. "Don't even start." "Come on," he said, grinning. "You know that thing you told me about from a few years ago? Bet they'd love to hear that one." The room went quiet. Everyone was looking at me, waiting for an explanation. My face burned with anger and humiliation. "Chris, drop it," I said, my voice low. He laughed like it was all a big joke. All right, just kidding. Man, you're so sensitive." That made me leave the party early, fuming. The next day, I called Chris out on his behavior. "What the hell is your problem?" I demanded. "My problem?" he shot back. "You're the one who's been ditching me for other people and acting like I don't exist. I'm just reminding you who's always been there for you." By threatening to spill my personal business? "It's not a threat," he said, his tone defensive. "I'd never actually tell anyone, but maybe you should think about who you prioritize in your life." That was it for me. I told him I was done, that I couldn't be friends with someone who used my trust as a way to manipulate me. Cutting Chris out of my life wasn't easy. We'd been close for so long, and I missed the good times we'd shared. But the freedom of not having to constantly stay alert anymore outweighed any nostalgic feelings. For weeks, I was on edge, expecting him to tell someone my secret out of spite. I even considered preemptively telling a few close friends just to take the power away from him. But in the end, I decided to let it be. I can't believe I let things go as far as they did. Trust is a delicate thing, and once it's broken, it's hard to repair. And in the end, Chris taught me a hard lesson about setting boundaries. Now I'm much more careful about who I open up to. Friendship is supposed to be a safe space, a source of support and encouragement. He started using my vulnerabilities against me. That's not a friend. That's an enemy. Chris and I haven't spoken since that day, and honestly, I'm okay with that. Life's too short to keep toxic people around, no matter how close you once were. I'm a nurse, and I work long hours with unpredictable schedules and little time for a social life. My best friend Rachel had always been my anchor through it all. She was the one who brought me coffee after an exhausting shift, the one who listened when I needed to vent. So when she suggested we share phone locations for safety, it didn't seem strange. "You're always out late," she said one evening over dinner. "What if something happened? At least I'd know where to find you." It sounded logical, thoughtful even. I didn't hesitate. "Sure," I said, pulling out my phone to enable location sharing, "but only if you share yours too." She laughed. "Of course, safety goes both ways, right?" At the time, I thought nothing of it. One Friday evening, I decided to grab dinner alone at an Italian place near my apartment. Just as I was finishing my meal, Rachel walked in, her face lighting up in surprise. "Melanie, no way. What are the odds?" she said, sliding into the chair across from me. "Yeah, what a coincidence," I said with a forced smile. It wasn't the first time something like that had happened. A few days earlier, I'd gone to the park after work to clear my head. Rachel showed up there too, claiming she decided to go for a jog and happened to see me. "Guess we're just on the same wavelength," she said with a smile. At first, I found it amusing, but as it happened more often, something told me it wasn't coincidence. The day Rachel showed up at my workplace was when things began to feel truly off. It was a Thursday night at the hospital, and I was catching up on patient charts when I heard a voice in the hallway. "Melanie!" I turned to see Rachel standing there, holding a cup of coffee. "Rachel? What are you doing here?" "I figured you could use a pick-me-up," she said, handing me the cup. "I saw you were still at work." Despite the discomfort, I thanked her and tried to let it go, but the seed of doubt had been planted. She hadn't asked to share my location, just for safety. She was tracking my every move. The breaking point came 2 weeks later. My parents were hosting a small family dinner, a chance to relax and catch up. I hadn't told Rachel about it. There was no reason to. As I pulled into my parents' driveway, there she was, leaning against her car with a bottle of wine in hand. "Surprise!" she called, waving. "Rachel, what are you doing here?" "I saw you were out this way and thought I'd drop by," she said as if it were the most natural thing in the world. Confused, my parents looked at each other as she walked up to the house like she'd been invited. "Rachel, this is a family dinner," I said, trying to sound less angry than I really was. "Oh, I won't stay long," she said breezily. "Just wanted to say hi." That night, my appetite was gone. I hardly touched my food. Rachel's presence felt like an intrusion, a line crossed. After dinner, I pulled her aside. "You can't just show up uninvited like this. It's not okay." Her smile disappeared, replaced by a look I'd never seen before, cold, almost accusatory. "I just wanted to spend time with you, Melanie. You've been so busy lately. Are you mad at me for caring?" Her words made me feel guilty, but the unease didn't leave me. The next day, I decided enough was enough. I called Rachel and told her we needed to talk. "Rachel, I don't think it's healthy for us to share locations anymore," I said. "It's starting to feel invasive." "Invasive?" she repeated, her voice sharp. "Melanie, I've been nothing but a good friend to you. You're overreacting. You've been showing up everywhere I go. It's not normal, Rachel. I need space." Her tone shifted, dripping with anger. "After everything I've done for you, I've been there for you through everything, Melanie, and this is how you treat me?" I hung up, my hands shaking. I blocked Rachel on social media and turned off location sharing. For a little while, it seemed like everything was okay. But one evening, as I was leaving work, I noticed a car parked across the street. It looked like Rachel's, but I couldn't be sure. The next morning, my neighbor mentioned seeing someone standing outside my building the night before. "She was just standing there, looking up at your window." My entire body tensed. A week later, I received a package at work, an envelope with no return address. Inside was a note scrawled in messy handwriting. "You can't just cut me off like that, Melanie. I know you better than anyone else does." The tipping point came when I was grocery shopping one evening. As I pushed my cart down an aisle, I saw her at the end, staring at me. I abandoned my cart and left the store, but it wasn't the last straw. The next day, I found a handwritten note tucked under my windshield wiper. It was from Rachel, saying something like, "We need to talk. Why are you avoiding me?" The words felt more desperate than threatening, but the fact that she knew where I parked during my shift was enough to freak me out. That's when I realized this wasn't going to stop on its own. So I called the police to report everything. her appearances at my workplace, the family gathering, the grocery store, and now this note. They filed a report and suggested I block her on everything, which I'd already done. Eventually, Rachel's behavior stopped. A few weeks later, I learned through mutual friends that she had moved to another city. Apparently, she was devastated, convinced I was the one in the wrong. She truly believed that she was trying to fix our friendship and couldn't handle the rejection. I couldn't help but feel a little guilty, even though I knew I hadn't done anything wrong. Her leaving brought some comfort, but what if she came back? The whole experience left me deeply shaken. Now I'm constantly turning to check behind me when I'm out alone. Friendship should be built on trust and respect, but Rachel had turned those things into weapons. I never imagined that my best friend, someone who felt like family, could become the source of my deepest fears. Tara and I had been inseparable for years. She was there through my worst days, when I lost my job, when I struggled with postpartum depression, and even when I had a falling out with my parents. I thought she was my rock, the one person I could rely on no matter what. But over time, Tara's kindness turned into something else. She'd get upset if I made plans without her, even if they were with my husband or other friends. She started calling constantly, asking what I was doing or where I was going. I decided not to worry about it, assuming she was lonely or maybe just overly caring. I didn't realize how deep her need for control went until it was too late. After my youngest started preschool, with a few extra hours in the day, I decided to focus on myself, joining a gym, reconnecting with old friends, and even picking up some freelance work. Tara didn't like it. "You don't need them," she said one afternoon. Her words came out with an unexpected bite. "I've been here for you when no one else was. Don't forget that." Her words stung, but I pushed it aside. I thought maybe she was just having a bad day. But then her behavior shifted from protective to possessive. One evening, I was at the park with my kids when I spotted her car parked at the edge of the lot. She didn't get out or wave. She just sat there watching. When I texted her later asking if she'd been at the park, she replied, "I just wanted to make sure you were okay." It felt off, but I didn't want to jump to conclusions. Things worsened when I tried to distance myself. I stopped answering her calls as often, excusing myself with busyness or family obligations. That's when she started showing up uninvited. One morning, I was dropping my oldest off at school when I saw Tara standing by the entrance. At first, I thought she was there for another reason, maybe to drop off her niece and nephew who attended the same school. But when I walked past her, she didn't say hi or acknowledge me. She just stared. That afternoon, she texted, "Saw you at the school. Cute outfit. Why didn't you say hi?" That felt weird. Then came the notes. I found the first one taped to my car window in the grocery store parking lot. It read, "You can't replace me." I was shaken, but still trying to rationalize her actions. Maybe it was a joke, I told myself. Maybe she didn't mean it the way it sounded. But the notes kept coming. One was slipped under my front door. Another was left in the mailbox. Each one carried the same chilling message: "You can't replace me." My husband, William, was the first to suggest I cut ties completely. "She's crossed a line," he said, holding one of the notes in his hand. "This isn't normal, and it's not healthy." I knew he was right, but I dreaded the confrontation. Tara had been such a big part of my life. How could I just walk away? Still, I couldn't ignore how her behavior was affecting my family. When I finally sat her down to talk, she didn't take it well. "You're abandoning me," she said with a shaking voice. "After everything I've done for you?" "Tara, this isn't about abandoning you," I tried to explain. "I just need space. My family needs space." Her expression darkened. "Your family? They weren't there for you when you needed them. I was." The conversation ended with her storming out, and I thought that was the end of it. I was wrong. A few days later, Tara showed up at William's office. She waited for him in the parking lot, yelling at him when he tried to walk past. "She's poisoning you against me!" Tara screamed. "You don't even know what she's capable of." William called security, and she left before they arrived. That night, we decided to call the police. They advised us to document everything, but said there wasn't much they could do unless she directly threatened us or trespassed on our property. That threat came sooner than we expected. One evening, as we were sitting down for dinner, we heard yelling outside. William went to the window and froze. Tara was standing in the driveway, screaming at the top of her lungs. "You've ruined everything," she shouted. "You can't just erase me from your life." William told me to take the kids upstairs while he called the police. I locked the bedroom door and held my youngest close, listening as Tara's voice grew louder and more desperate. When the police arrived, she refused to leave quietly. They had to escort her off the property, and we were finally able to breathe. The next day, we filed for a restraining order. Tara didn't contest it, but the damage was already done, and nothing could change that. I still had that feeling of being watched, of waiting for the other shoe to drop. We installed security cameras around the house, changed our routines, and had a serious talk with the kids. We explained that Aunt Tara was going through some serious mental health issues, and that if she ever tried to approach them, they needed to run and call for help immediately. It broke my heart to even have that conversation, but it felt necessary. The once warm friendship I'd treasured had turned into a source of fear and paranoia. I still have moments where I wonder what went wrong. Tara wasn't always like this. She was kind, generous, and supportive, until she wasn't. I've learned to trust my instincts and set boundaries, even when it's uncomfortable. And sometimes walking away is the only way to protect yourself and your family. Tara taught me that not all friendships are meant to last. Some are lessons and some are warnings. And this one, it was both. If these chilling tales of crazy best friends had you questioning your own friendships, don't forget to hit that like button and subscribe for more spine-tingling stories. Have a scary or unsettling friendship experience of your own? Drop it in the comments. I'd love to hear it. Share this video with someone who might need a reminder to watch out for red flags. Stay safe out there. Sometimes the people closest to us are the ones we should fear most. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you in the next nightmare.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. BetterHelp recently surveyed over 16,000 people and found that while 75% of people believe it's wise to seek support, only 27% of Americans are in therapy, and people stay silent to avoid being judged. BetterHelp has over 10 years of experience matching you with the right therapist. Because we're all better with help. Visit BetterHelp.com/stopthestigma for their first ever State of Stigma report, the latest in mental health research.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.